Hey guys, it's James Chester here. You're listening to the Gather Round the Lamp podcast by underagaslitlamp.com.
Gather Round the Lamp, an Aston Villa podcast.
And instead it goes to Bailey!
Hello, listener, and welcome to another bumper edition of your favorite Aston Villa podcast, Gather Round the Lamp, brought to you in association with underagaslitlamp.com. Do not adjust your speakers here. This is not the voice of your dear leader, Andy. This is me, Craig Storrod, filling in this week for hosting duties on the regular pod. And I am delighted to welcome Daniel Bettridge.
Hiya, Craig. Hiya, listener. Yeah, no, Andy, it feels not that you're not a more than adequate replacement, Craig, but it always feels like sad when there's an Andy-shaped hole. There's nothing wrong, listener, by the way. He's just got technical troubles, like kind of Stockley Park technical troubles. It's laptop issues, nothing more.
There are some technical issues, and it does almost feel adulterous doing this behind the. It's like we're in a seedy motel.
I was going to say, we're in a seedy motel behind his back. He might walk in at any moment onto our Google Meet here, and we both have to kind of hide our blushes and cover ourselves up.
He could. He might have our locations tracked and be following us because he's. This is going down. This is why Andy hosts.
This is why we need Andy hosting, because otherwise we libel him as some kind of stalker.
There we go. And we've just had a wonderful opportunity to really show what we're worth. That we went into CD motels within the first 2 minutes, which probably tells you all you need to know about this week's episode. So we are obviously going to cover some things today. We're going to cover the 2-2 draw at Bournemouth. We're going to give you a preview of the Manchester City game. And as well as that, we will have a brief discussion on the Unai Emery takeover of another club to the V Sports Empire Network. But without further ado, let's talk a little bit about Bournemouth. So we're coming into this off the back of a 2-1 win. There was some crowd trouble, obviously, at the hands of the Legia Warsaw fans, Daniel. Just briefly, give us an overview of your take of the ugly scenes on Thursday night at Villa Park.
It was a tough one. I watched it on TV, so you only got a very, very small picture of what was happening on TV because it's TNT sports coverage, which is terrible. It's like looking through the bottom of a milk bottle. It's awful. But James Rushton, kind of sometime friend of the show, did a fantastic piece on his newsletter, basically talking about he caught up with some Legia fans beforehand and said they weren't all roaming mobs of thugs, but were actually a bunch of good fans who were maybe kind of feeling quite hard done by because they had their allocation stripped from them. But I mean, look, there's literally no excuse for setting another human being on fire, whether you intended to or not. And that's what happened to one of the police officers who got hit by a flare. So no one likes to see crowd trouble. But fair play to those Warsaw fans who managed to throw stuff into Villa Park. I'm not sure I've ever seen rioting fans throw stuff into a ground before. So there's some good arms amongst them, if nothing more. But yeah.
There was Hellmann's to pay. Oh, dear. I mean, I shouldn't make light of it. It is a very serious situation. And obviously, we are in the midst of a European campaign. Just give me your thoughts as well, Daniel, on this. We are now 1 point away. We could have secured automatic kind of playoff avoiding a promotion with another goal. But we didn't quite get there. But we now need a point to guarantee that we win the group. What has been your read on our Europa Conference League, jaunt thus far?
Jaunt is probably the right word for it. I mean, there's two things. On the pitch, it's job done, right? Like, there was the wobble in Warsaw, which, good headline, someone should have done that, by the way. But the wobble in Warsaw, and then we've righted the ship since there, and we'll qualify. We should qualify top of the group, and then ridiculously, you get a bye till, what is it, March is the next game? It's a long break, so So it's job done if we do that. But the great thing for me is midweek football. I love it. There's nothing more fun than having two Villa games a week. Well, actually, there is when we're winning. It's a lot of fun to watch two Villa games a week when we're winning. But do you know, Emery's done enough. We will qualify top of the group. It will all be good. But how about you, Craig? It's twice as much Villa to watch in kind of mid-morning and mid-afternoon for you, so maybe not as fun.
Ah, no, I love it. I love it. I watch a lot of games on delay now because of commitments
because
in life.
Of life.
But I do. I watch them all. I watch them all. I've never enjoyed being a Villa fan as much as this, probably since I was a kid with a season ticket going to see the Brian Little, Dwight York inspired Aston Villa side, which was romping to fourth place, which then, children, boys and girls, didn't even get you Champions League. So anyway, I digress. But the point is, I'm loving it. There's few things I enjoy more than trying to sit down at whatever time of day it is and watch Aston Villa. Obviously, we have, for cheap plug time, cheap plug alert, we do have a litany, a whole database, a vault, if you will, of Gather Round Again, our sister shows, presented by yours truly, on YouTube and also on the regular podcast feeds. So check that out for all of your Aston Villa Europa Conference League goodness.
On the subject of Conference League, before we get off it, and I might have talked about this on the pod before, so stop me if I have, but can we talk about the theme tune, the Europa Conference League theme tune? Because it's an absolute...
Only if you sing it first.
I can't sing it, but it's an absolute banger. It's not like the Champions League one, which is just kind of operatic nonsense. It's just a banger of a tune. I love hearing it every Thursday. It really gets me up. Like I'm kind of quietly on my sofa. This is not a supported by some kind of drug company ad. But what I'm saying is the Conference League tune gets me going, Craig. It revs my engine.
I heard that. And hey, if any of you are struggling to afford the blue pill these days, don't worry about it. Just go and listen to the Conference League and it will get you up for anything and ready to go.
That's all I'm saying.
Give it a go. And we practice safe sex here on the Gather
Round. We really need Andy back. This is why we need Andy.
So make sure that you, practice safe sex this Christmas. All right. So another Thursday, Sunday situation for Aston Villa. There was some rotation in terms of the lineup for Bournemouth. Let's just go through that very quickly. Martinez returned in goal. Diego Carlos returned in central defence. Ezri Konsa went to right back with Matty Cash remaining on the bench. Luca Dean at left back, replacing Alex Moreno, who obviously marked his return to the side with a goal. John McGinn and Douglas Luiz continued in midfield, as did Youri Tielemans. And it was a rare start for Leon Bailey. And we also saw the return, thankfully, to fitness of Ollie Watkins and a returning Nicolo Zaniolo. We are going to have a Zaniolo chat specifically, Daniel. But before that, what were your thoughts of another kind of mixed up lineup from Unai Emery?
Yeah, the injuries and suspensions are starting to creep in a little bit now. We're in silly season, aren't we? There's what, three games this week, and that's on the back of two games last week, and this is where the squad comes into play. I think it's about the best 11 we could have put out. I think we really missed Boubacar Kamara. There's a huge hole when he's not playing, and with Big Daddy Donk seemingly not ready for a start, there's a huge defensive hole in there. But how about yourself, Craig? I mean, is there anything different he could have done? Do we have any other players that could have started in there?
I'm just wondering if there is a chance, and he came on later on, is there a moment where we're going to see Duran and Watkins kind of partnered up front from the start? That was potentially something, but Zaniolo, he wanted to give Zaniolo an opportunity in his favoured position. We'll talk about how that went in a moment. But the key is, I guess, that we're seeing, and this is not a questioning of the manager, but we're seeing more chances for some players than others, I think, is interesting. You mentioned Leandro Dendonca. Now, he would have been, I think, a good fit for this fixture, particularly given that Bournemouth have a couple of units up there. Dendonka from set pieces and perhaps to add a little bit of steel to the midfield. This seems like a no-brainer for someone like him, but he went with Youri Tielemans in the middle. And Dendonka, I don't think has really put too much... Stevenage aside, everyone, I accept that. But other than that, hasn't really done too much wrong in a Villa shirt, but it seems like his days might be numbered. Likewise, Callum Chambers, who doesn't even make the bench these days. So my question to you would be, Daniel, when you have players, international players like Dendonka and Chambers, who are on good money, who are not being used really at all, do we need to move these players along for FFP purposes and maybe bring in a couple of younger, cheaper continental or local imports or youth team players who kind of can fill out that squad role? Because that's a lot of money going down the pan every week for Dendonka and Chambers when they don't get any minutes.
Yeah, I mean, two separate cases here. Chambers was awful away in Warsaw, and I don't think we'll see minutes ever again. He was so bad, so far off the pace in that game. And outside of a couple of Beckenbauer-esque passes and goals last season, or the season before, was it? I forget. But anyway, he's not up to Premier League standard. He was a free transfer that we got to fill out the squad. He's not good enough. I'm not even sure he's championship standard these days. And I think we might struggle to offload his wages. Dendonka, on the other hand, is a strange one. He's clearly not the most mobile of guys, is he? He's kind of, you know, he's hilarious when he runs around the pitch. But we do not have many defensive midfielders at the club, you know, of that kind of ball-winning style, the camera style. So I'm surprised he's not getting more minutes. I don't know whether the case is that Emery doesn't like him or whether he's not match fit and we can't give him an opportunity to get match fit. You'd have thought the Europa Conference was where that would happen, though, and it's not happened. So to answer your question, probably yes, they both need to be moved on. I think Dendonka's on pretty healthy wages, too, so that's not an easy sale. As to who we bring in, I think the problem we got at the moment is defence, midfield and right-back are probably the biggest holes we've got in the squad. I mean, Matty Cash was terrible against Tottenham, didn't start against Bournemouth, and to be fair, wasn't great midweek either. And I think he's starting to look, his place in the side is starting to look reasonably perilous. And when Kamara's out, there's a gaping hole, as I say, in that defensive midfield slot. So I think we're starting to see the cracks developing in an Aston Villa squad that we thought was strong. But hey, I mean, we're fourth and, what is it, 4 points off the top at this point, almost 40% of the way through the season. I'm not complaining. I am starting to worry a little bit, though.
It is all going pretty well. I mean, and under Dendonka, he started the big win against Manchester United. He started that game and played against the massive win towards the end of last season against Newcastle United as well, which was probably our best performance for years. That 3-0 win was just majestical, if that's a word, what it is now. But, yeah, hasn't really been seen too much. There were reports recently emanating from Belgium that Dendonka would be moving along. But, again, it's a strange one to me because with Kamara out and against a side like Bournemouth, who were very, very busy, they were very, very fit, it all seemed to point to someone like Dendonka coming in and maybe Tielemans having that more advanced role. So you mentioned Matty Cash there.
Yeah.
Matty Cash did have a horror show against Tottenham and was subbed at halftime, that's fair to say. Also in midweek, he just seems to be a little bit out of form. But the Bournemouth side really targeted Ezri Konsa. Do you think that is more because Ezri Konsa is not necessarily a comfortable fullback or because our friend Leon Bailey, who, while he does very good work the other end, isn't necessarily the most thoughtful defensive contributor that we've ever had?
You're right to say they targeted him. I think I saw it was like 75% of their attacks went down the left side. And that's not a coincidence that is targeted. And they weren't just focusing the ball down there. They were overloading him. Ezri Konsa, they were throwing two men up against him, and it caused us all kinds of problems. Partly, you're right, Leon Bailey is not the most diligent of defenders. He's not going to be tracking back the length of the pitch. And for all of Ezri Konsa's quality, and I think he's a phenomenal defender, and he can play right back very well, you miss so much by taking him out the centre. He's been so important for us in the centre. So I think that's the bigger problem for me, where I say there's a right back hole is, I think we lose more about taking Konsa out the centre than we do kind of have problems with him at right back. And once teams are starting to target that, whether it's Bournemouth against Consor or Tottenham to a degree against Matty Cash, then there's clearly a weak spot in this Villa lineup. And I think it is that right-hand side, because of the way we shift over into a free. I think that that's kind of why teams are targeting us there. But I don't know. I don't like taking Consor out in the middle. I don't know about you. I have nothing against Matty Cash. I just don't, same as you, I don't think he's having a great couple of weeks. And we don't have anyone who can slot in there comfortably in his place.
Well, yeah, the reserve right back, really, you would think would be Callum Chambers. But obviously, as we mentioned, he is on the SH1T list and will be moving along, I'm sure, if possible. And then you have Konsa. But the problem with putting Konsa there, as we saw, is then you're then playing Diego Carlos. And Diego Carlos has his strengths. But Diego Carlos, nice smooth six segue here, was responsible for the first concession of the Aston Villa goal giveaway club was alive and well. It was Boubacar Kamara in midweek against Legia Warsaw. And we see exactly the same thing from Diego Carlos. Really, really sloppy pass given away on the edge of Villa's penalty area. It gives it to Ryan Christie, who I thought was very impressive, by the way, yesterday. Very, very impressive, Ryan Christie. So good for him. A teammate, of course, Scottish teammate of our own Bubba John McGinn. And he lays it off to Semenyo, who slots it away quite comfortably from the area. And again, we're seeing this pattern emerge. It happened against Tottenham. It's happened all throughout the season against Forest. Aston Villa concede an early away goal, and we've got it all to do. What were your thoughts after this giveaway from Diego Carlos?
There's two things here. The early goals is a problem. I mean, the goals are a problem. Before I diverge too much, Villa are fantastic this season. We are attacking like I've never seen us attack before, but we are conceding goals at a rate that we can't carry on conceding if we want to progress in this. Well, if we want to stay in the top four, which is lofty ambitions. But the early goals are the killer. You go away from home, we're clearly not as confident away from home as we are at home. And you concede an early goal and your confidence is shot right from the back. And it's, I don't know, the mistakes, I can take the mistakes. This is the Emery ball way, right? We play high risk, high reward football and that will involve mistakes. But this one felt particularly sloppy from Diego Carlos. I don't know about you, Craig, but it's not even like he was under tons of pressure. It just felt like a sloppy ball out from the back.
Yeah, it was sloppy, it was poor, and it was really disappointing from Diego Carlos because, again, there is mitigation in that he hasn't played a lot of football, but that kind of giveaway is just really, really difficult to do. And it seems as though, I just feel like we're, and this is no slight on Diego Carlos, I just feel like we're less secure defensively without Ezri Konsa in the middle. That's the beginning and the end of it. And so I think that moving into the Man City and Arsenal fixtures this week, I would like to see Diego Carlos return to the bench and hopefully Matty Cash can rediscover some form. But this is a real issue. We have to come from behind against Tottenham to win. We had to come from behind against Forest and couldn't do it. And again, 10 minutes in, we've got to come back from nowhere. And we're literally giving teams goals. And it's really hard to recover from that. And I know that we're doing very well. We are still in the top four. But Newcastle have made up points on us this weekend. And our gap between us and them is now down to only 3 points. And I know that Newcastle lost this fixture away at Bournemouth a couple of weeks ago. But it feels like we are shooting ourselves in the foot a little bit here with these early goals. Like, even if we could keep it tight for the first 45 minutes, I think we'd set ourselves up a lot better because I think the way we pass teams to death, often their legs fall off and we're pretty good at scoring late goals. But it's a worrying trend, Daniel.
Yeah, I mean, what do you reckon? We're obviously Jekyll and Hyde, home and away. And despite picking up 4 points from Bournemouth away and Tottenham away, which isn't a bad haul, let's be honest, we're still not a good team away from home. Why do you reckon it is that different? Is it just the home crowd and a confidence thing? Is it a tactical thing? Kind of, what do you reckon the problem is there?
I think that we may be being a little bit too gung-ho away from home on occasion. And I think that we are not, I think there's nothing wrong with seeing, and even against Bournemouth, whoever it is, all the Premier League teams, well, not all of them, Sheffield United and Burnley are pretty terrible, but most of the Premier League teams are of a decent standard this year. And I think there might be something to be said. I mean, it's an old cliche and it sounds old school, kind of Steve Bruce talk. But there is something to be said for keeping it tight first 25 minutes, get the crowd a little bit, you know, itchy and twitchy, and then you start to move into the game from that kind of base. But we're coming out gung-ho to try and score a goal, and I'm all for that. But perhaps there might be a little bit more pragmatism shown just to stop this kind of trend in away games. Let's see. I don't know who the next away game is without looking at it.
Me neither, actually.
But I can look at it because I have Google in front of me. Obviously, in our next away fixture, not that's in the Premier League, is going to be actually away to Brentford. Very good side, and certainly not a team that you want to give a goal start to. So maybe we can see another Sunday kickoff, December 17th. Maybe in that game, maybe we can keep it tight, keep it to 0-0 for the first 25 minutes and see if that helps. But I don't know. I don't see Unai is not someone for changing. And again, his results are yielding great success. So hard to argue.
It's something to do with a high line, I think, because you've got, I mean, in all of the, you look at any of the statistics, we're top four for chances created, XG, kind of goals scored, but we're decidedly mid-table for conceding goals. And that's a problem with a high line, but especially away from home, there must be, whether it's a confidence thing, because we're playing such knife-edge defending, whether it's a crowd thing, a communication thing, I don't know what it is, but we're a team that plays in those fine margins, and those fine margins just don't work away from home. So I'm with you. I'd like us to practice a bit more pragmatism. But look, who are we to complain about Unai Emery? This is a man who's got us fourth in the table. Fourth. And fourth, with 40% of the season pretty much gone. That is miraculous. And this is a Bournemouth side. Let's not get it wrong. We were outplayed, but they are not a bad team. They've got a great manager, one there that Emery knows well, who's from a similar region of Spain to him, who he described as one of the best managers before the game, as all managers seem to do these days. Kind of their opposition, doesn't matter if it's Steve Bruce or Iriola, they're the best manager in the league. But and they're a good side. They turned over Newcastle, they'll turn over many more sides this year. So I see this as a point won rather than 2 points lost. And it's, I think we've got to be positive about this. As I say, 4 points out of two tough away games, I'd have taken that if you'd have offered it to me before them both.
Very true, very true. I mean, perhaps we are nitpicking, but I just want to say, imagine what is possible if we can not concede a goal away from home in the first 25 minutes. Who knows? But we have a, speaking of fine margins, it was a fine margin from Leon Bailey, who danced inside and like a young Iron Robin, hit an unspeakable drive into the bottom corner, completely unstoppable. A seventh goal of the season from Leon Bailey, who just really isn't a starter. These kind of numbers now are getting to be very impressive. Seven goals from Leon Bailey. It's only December. He's well on course for, well, obviously, if he keeps this up, 14, 15 goals as a sub, as a winger. Am I dreaming?
I don't think you are. I think it was you, Craig, shared something in our group chat recently about him being one of the most productive or dangerous players in any of the top five leagues kind of this year, kind of minutes per goal contribution or something.
Yeah, they're ridiculous. It's something like 60 minutes or something per goal contribution. It's obscene numbers.
It's crazy. And I'm still, maybe it's an eye test thing, I still don't think he's had a brilliant game in him. He's had moments, the Alkmaar game away, he was superb, but he's not had a great 90 minutes in him. But look, this is the player we thought we bought for £30 million 2 years ago, wasn't it? This was the player we were hoping for. It's taken him time to settle, but now he's settling, and it's just another weapon for us. I must admit, I think his best position is off the bench. I still don't see 90 minutes in the Premier League from him, but if he continues to produce, then he, especially with Moussa Diaby going off the boil a little bit, we've got other options in the squad. Just whether he stays fit for long enough is what worries me.
2 points here. The first point I would say in terms of Leon Bailey, you have been one of Leon Bailey's fiercest critics here on the show. Do you owe Leon an apology, number one?
No, clearly what I'm saying is inspiring him. They've got Leon is obviously a listener to the podcast and is printing out these quotes and sticking them on his locker. And that's what's fueling these performances, Craig. But,
okay.
but you're also right. I have been critical of him. And I do have to eat a little bit of humble pie there because he's been fantastic for us this year.
Good. Well, okay, you can take it. You can have a frozen humble pie and let it defrost on the on the sideboard in your motel room, okay? That's how it's going to taste. So the other thing I would say is, are you prepared to admit that Leon Bailey's a better player than Trezeguet?
Oof, this is hard. I mean, Leon Bailey's a scorer of goals. I'm just not sure if he's a scorer of important goals. He's not put one in the back post of a semi-final yet, has he? I will wait until the end of Leon Bailey's Villa tenure before totting up those numbers, is my pragmatic answer.
Okay, good. And for a pragmatic football club owner, you see an asset like Leon Bailey, who is now performing and justifying his £30 million price tag 3 years into a four-year deal. Is this a point now where we have to get Leon signed up to an extension? Because in terms of an impact sub, there aren't too many better, as you say, in the top five leagues of world football.
The Bailey contract worries me. And that's not just because I've been playing a lot of Football Manager and I've had to sell him multiple times, because he is on the third year of a four-year contract. It's not a pretty situation. I mean, you're in America. They call this a contract year, right? It's coming up to the last year of your contract. You're trying to get the big trade or the big free agency deal. I feel like maybe there's a little bit of that going on with Leon Bailey. He realises if he doesn't do something this year, then he's probably off, because we've got to cash in on him. The problem is, I don't know what enough looks like with Leon Bailey. I know it sounds harsh because he is delivering these spectacular numbers, but he's on big money, and you imagine there'd be a pay rise to any contract extension. I'm still not sure if he's worth it. And that sounds ridiculous given his contributions, but I'm still not sure he's consistent enough to justify that kind of salary. But I mean, look, we're not exactly a poor club, are we? I suspect we'll re-up his contract. But the question is, will this be a career year? Is he playing for that contract? And then will he revert to the mean? God, I am cruel about Leon Bailey. I don't know why.
Wow.
I don't know why I'm so mean about him. He's a lovely guy. It's just
I don't know that he can... I don't know what more you want him to do here.
What do I want him to do? It's
7 goals from the bench and it's December 4th? I mean, goodness me. You do drive a hard bargain. I would love to see the year that Trezeguet got 7 goals before December. I can look, because it doesn't exist. It's Scotch mist. So anyway, let's talk about another player who actually played off Ollie Watkins, Nicolò Zaniolo. Now, this loan deal is costing us around £5 million in terms of wages alone, plus whatever fee we gave to Galatasaray. Now, if Leon Bailey is the Tor André Flo of super subs, then Nicolò Zaniolo is the Bosco Balaban of output for Aston Villa. I want to say 16 appearances in all competitions for Zaniolo. I will check that. But either or whatever it is, it is 0 goals, 0 assists. He's now played in all of the upfront positions, including the one he's supposed to be most adept at. Clearly, the guy has talent. We've seen flashes of brilliance. But to be putting up those kind of, there's the stat padding, and then there's this. To put up 0 in a team which is the second highest goal scorers in the league, flying high, that's kind of hard to do, you would think, Daniel.
Yeah, I don't know how he's doing it, because you'd have thought that you just need to turn up for something to bounce off you, and Ollie Watkins put it in at the moment. But it's such an interesting one with Zaniolo, because I think all of us have taken a bit of a liking to him, right? There's something about him that makes you kind of want to root for him and want him to do well. But for whatever reason, it's not working. Look, I don't think he was meant to play this many minutes for us. He's coming off of serious injuries and serious rehabilitation, and I don't think we intended for him to play this many minutes. I think we intended him to play as that second striker more often, and he's played off the left probably 80-90% of the time for us. But all the excuses I try and come up for him, bless Leon Bailey, if he is listening, he's probably like screaming into his headphones right now of why I'm defending Zaniolo. But I think there's something there with Zaniolo, which the club obviously do, which is why you take him on loan. And the joy of a loan is, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. It's not the end of the world. But you're right, he's got to start producing something. And it, to be honest with you, he's got to start producing it quick. We have got 8 games in the next month, if not more. And we really need every warm body we've got to be firing if we're going to get through those games. It's right now that the Buendia and Mings injuries are going to really start to bite us. But I really worry for Zaniolo. The other thing, look, let's mention it. He's being investigated in the same way that Tonali was, although not with the same kind of suspension. And you don't know what kind of psychological toll that's taken on him too. So there are mitigating factors there. But as you say, Craig, for all the mitigating factors, there's a couple of big zeros right there screaming at us.
There's a big goose egg looking at us in both of his twin goose eggs in his goals and assists column. And these troubles started before that arrest in. And I also gave an impassioned plea and said, you know, that kind of emotional drama of going through that arrest to be pulled out of the Italy camp and arrested and all those kind of things for illegality certainly would be very stressful, anyone, let alone a young kid who's trying to rebuild his career after 2 terrible ACL injuries. So I get all that. But these issues started before, and I the fact that he was pulled at halftime, I think, was a sweet mercy, because actually I think he cost us as well yesterday. He had a couple of good opportunities, one from outside the box he skied, and he was put clean through, miscontrolled, and the ball was just bouncing off him. Clearly he's low on confidence, and normally sometimes you have to give people an opportunity to play your way into form. But we're not quite good enough to carry him at the moment in time. So difficult to see. Perhaps he can have a 90 minutes in the game coming up at Mostar. That hopefully is a level of competition that he can excel at, and maybe, you know, he can just get one bouncing in off his ample backside, and that can be the start of something. But as it stands, you're looking at a £20 million transfer fee plus £13.2 million in possible add-ons. Add that to the £5 million loan fee already paid and wages. You're looking at a potentially £40 million deal for Zaniolo, and I just don't see it, however much you have enjoyed him and his wonderful beauty and skill, I just don't see any way that you could justify a £40 million package for this guy at this point in time.
I agree, but there is a tantalising player there. There's a diamond in the rough that if you can, and it's a huge if you can get him back to where he was before the injuries, if you can get him firing on all cylinders. I mean, the Italy coach said the other week that he's got the potential to be a world-class striker, and he does. But there's a lot of ifs there, and I think you're right. It's a lot of money to spend on ifs. And look, we've got 6-7 months of the season still to go. He could suddenly get fit, go off on a tear, and £40 million in add-ons, and everything looks like a bargain for him. Right now, though, it doesn't look it. But here's my kind of question back to you. We've got all these games coming up. We're light on warm bodies in those striking positions, especially, or the attacking positions. As you say, it doesn't look like Emery wants to play Duran up there with Ollie. Diaby's off the boil a little bit, and you're starting to scratch around for options. So I'm not sure we have many choices but to play him in some of these games.
There is a rumour. Well, this is true currently, but I've seen a rumour that Buendia is progressing quite nicely and that he could be back in training as early as February. So, but even then, we have a boatload of fixtures before now and then. So is it something where you potentially dip into the transfer market with this window opening in you know 25 days or so? So this is something you could fix very quickly with some kind of perhaps short-term loan deal. And the kind of thing that is stuck in my craw a little bit is the Jadon Philogene sale. Again, I say this having watched him live in person, where he was one of Villa's standout players in the summer during the summer USA Premier League, whatever it was. And he was flying. Unai Emery comes out and says, this guy's part of our plans. He's been tearing it up. He's been tearing the, I know he said something rude there. He's been doing very well in the championship, like incredible numbers, but especially for someone under the age of 23. He's had some standout performances as well for the England under-21s. He seems to be growing and maturing. He's clearly too good for the championship already. Was this a mistake? Should have he been kept around? Because that is someone who could play in that second striker role. This is someone who can play left wing, right wing. And this is someone who has a completely different profile to anyone else on the books. Was this an error for Aston Villa to let him go, do we think?
Put simply, yes. Like, clearly, I think at the time we were all upset he was leaving. And as you say, he is tearing it up in Hull, former city of culture that it is, European city of culture. And fair play to him. He's doing great over there. There's something at play here that's not just was he good enough to stay at Villa or not. Otherwise, we wouldn't have sold him. There is some FFP thing, something with the player, something going on that made us sell him, because you don't start that many preseason games and then get sold to Hull. Like, it just doesn't, that wasn't happening. And remember at the time, we thought Ramsey was coming back quicker than he has done. Buendia was still fully fit. There wasn't an opportunity for him to get in the squad. So whether the player wanted more minutes or Emery had to sell him, something forced his hand. But clearly another top drawer attacker right now, a bit more pace too, let's be honest, would be really nice, would be great for us. But I suppose I'm saying it there. JJ played some meaningful minutes on Thursday night again, and he's looking closer to fitness, which is the apocryphal new signing, isn't it? Like a new signing for Villa, him coming back. We're finally getting that kind of player back into our squad. Just, it would be nice to have Philogene kind of there too.
It is, and that was the halftime substitution. The aforementioned Nicolò Zaniolo was removed at halftime after a quite desperate performance, let's be fair to him. JJ comes into the fold and not completely back to his full flying self, as we saw, but definitely adds a new dimension. But going back to the game, we get into the second half, and again, it's that right-hand side of Aston Villa is exposed. A cross comes in by Kerkez, and Dominic Solanke rolls Pau Torres like he isn't there and tucks one away. What did you think of this goal? Not as egregious as the first one given away by Diego Carlos, but also not the best goal in the world. Seemed a little bit simple to me, Dan.
Yeah, I agree. He rolled his man far too easily. And again, look, Solanke's a good striker. I think Kerkez is a great left back, by the way. I'd really like to see him in a Villa shirt. I think my bigger problem with this, rather than the goal, was I think Bournemouth should have been reduced to 10 men before this. I kind of think Semenya was lucky to not get a second yellow. Kluivert was lucky to not get a second yellow. I don't think it would have... Look, we didn't deserve to win this game, but I'm not sure they should have had the full 11 men on the pitch at this point either. But maybe I'm just being a bit salty.
Yeah, I think the shirt pull, I think it's one of those where, I mean, this is not... I think there is some common sense officiating sometimes. I think that if that had been his first offence, the shirt pull, I think he gets a yellow for that. But because it's his second offence, it's almost like there's a higher bar for a second yellow. And I know this isn't what it's supposed to be, but I think there's kind of an unspoken rule generally that for a second yellow card offence, it has to be a little bit of a higher threshold than a first yellow card offence. So I think it's a little bit of that. I wasn't, like, if he was sent off, he could have had no complaints. But I think if I put myself into the Aston Villa fan shoes, if John McGinn was sent off for that as a second yellow, I'd be furious. I'd be like, come on, ref. So I can kind of see, I can see it both ways, but certainly it was not to Aston Villa's advantage, because Semenyo had a wonderful game, as did Ryan Christie. So, but we also had, which I forgot to mention in the first half, Diego Carlos put us in the lead, or so we thought, and then we had another. It was even longer than the 3 minutes spent last week on Ollie Watkins' goal. If we are looking for toenails that are offside, and it's taking us 4 minutes to find that toenail, and the toenail, you know, may be broken and damaged because they're footballers, and it's really difficult to see. Have we lost the plot here, or are you an absolutist here and be like, no, this is brutal. Offside is offside, whether it's your toenail or a wisp of your beard.
I'm in a really tricky position here, because I dislike VAR immensely. I think the offside decisions are ludicrous. It's crazy. And on one hand, FIFA are apparently going to bring the daylight rule in next year, which is you have to see clear daylight. You're not just measuring a toenail on a frame. You've got to see clear daylight. So on the one hand, I'm very much excited by that because it might fix the farce that is VAR offsides. But with my Aston Villa hat on, the thought of marginal offsides being gone ruins a large part of our defensive strategy. The reason we play such a high line is even if you don't get it right, VAR's a get-out-of-jail-free card. So, look, I mean, it's ridiculous that in this day and age we are... Oh, yeah, maybe it's not ridiculous. This is what technology does, isn't it, Craig? Like, technology ruins everything. Sometimes it's good. You can chat to someone on the other side of the world about Aston Villa and broadcast it to a handful of fans that might want to listen. On the other hand, it ruins literally every part of society, including offside calls. So, I don't know. I dislike VAR. I think it's ridiculous. And this was offside by the current laws. But he's level, isn't he? Technically, he's level. We both agree in that, or is that me just tinfoil hat in it?
No, I think he's. I think he. Look, I think if we're looking into that kind of minutia, I think the semi-automation for offside at the World Cup seemed to work a lot better than this, and I think that there is. I think my main issue with it is there's unequal application of offside. And I think, and of VAR in general, it seems like if a goal goes in against somebody, sometimes we are looking for any reason we can to disallow it. And other people, it's just kind of waved through. And we had a couple of those, I think, against Newcastle, where they didn't even show the line on the screen. It's like, yeah, it's fine, when they were very, very close calls. Now, listen, that probably didn't alter the points going to Newcastle on that day. But even so, it was very clear that there were some close offside calls for a couple of their goals and they just waved them straight through. Whereas when it's an Aston Villa goal, we've seen 2 weeks in a row now, lengthy reviews for the Watkins goal and the Diego Carlos disallowed goals. And then you think to yourself, and this might be again tin hat paranoia as a fan, are we getting equally treated here or are we getting, you know, screwed over? So I think those are difficult things, but VAR now has become like its own thing. I do remember the halcyon days where this was being argued. This is going to change everything. There's going to be less arguments. You know, we spend too much time talking about referees, like on the phone-ins and the talking heads that discuss football. We're just spending too much time talking about referees. When VAR comes in, we can just focus on the game. Well, not so much.
It's laughable, isn't it? But then again, technology is, I say it's all bad. It robbed Leon Bailey of a wonderful goal on Thursday night, but it wasn't over the line. That's when technology is good, because there's a hard and fast rule. Was the ball over the line? No, it wasn't. And technology has shown us that. The problem with offsides, and not to become one of those talking heads that's discussing VAR and referees at length, it's become so subjective. We haven't created hard and fast rules. We've just created another set of things to argue about. And humans love arguing. We've created just the perfect storm of arguments. And look, we'll see what happens next year, but this season's been an absolute gong show for refereeing. We saw it at the weekend again, the late Man City breakaway, which, you know, again, with my Villa hat on, Erling Haaland should be banned for the game on Wednesday because of his outburst against the referee. That would be very nice indeed. But that was a crazy refereeing decision. And it's we've seen a lot of them this year, and this won't be the last time we have a close offside call with Villa.
It won't be. We've had plenty. I think the worst one was, there's two that come to my mind. There was a Wesley one away against Bournemouth in the same game that Ben Mee ended his top flight career. Mm-hmm. Which was literally just ridiculous, because it was, the frame was blurry. And then the Henry Lansbury one, which was, I think, a Kevin Friend error. But we've all been on the end of some terrible refereeing decisions. And the referee was very happy with his yellow cards. I think there were 7 or 8 different bookings on Sunday. But again, Villa find themselves 2-1 down. Solanke, who seems to be turning into a bit of a player, had a lot of pressure, kind of a £20 million fee moving at the time, which was a lot of money. Has really had to take some time in the Championship to kind of learn his craft, and is turning into a proper centre forward, as they say, and someone who has definitely got a big upside. Of course, a youth World Cup winner, I want to say, with England as well, I believe. But we huffed and we puffed, and Unai Emery rang the changes as well. Not only, obviously, was Zaniolo dispensed with, John McGinn, who looked very leggy to me, came off for John Duran. And then we saw a triple substitution with Alex Moreno coming on for Luca Dean, Matty Cash coming on for Ezri Konsa, and Moussa Diaby coming on for Leon Bailey. It seems as though with us 2-1 down and kind of 10, 15 minutes to go, Unai Emery was eager, shall we say, to try something different. Very rare we see a 5 substitutions made by Unai, but yesterday was the day against Bournemouth, Daniel.
Yeah, you say ring the changes. 2 new fullbacks shows the paucity of options. But, I mean, Diaby's a wonderful player to bring off the bench. And it did feel like we were just throwing stuff at the wall and hoping it would stick. I think I had a little look at the XG and theirs was over 2. Ours was below 1. So we kind of stole this one. Maybe it was masterful tactical decisions, but I think it was more throw some players at it, see if we can do something. And sure enough, we did at the end.
Well, we did at the end, and we were kept in it. Speaking of their XG, by some, it's worth a mention quickly. Emi Martinez pulled off at least 2 world-class saves, if not 3, in this game, and he did the same against Tottenham.
Yeah,
that double save against Daniel Johnson and not Daniel Johnson. Daniel Johnson was his dad, right? Brennan Johnson.
Yeah, it's there you Lo Celso, was it, who had the long range effort?
And I think it was Hjolberg.
Mm.
Anyway, doesn't matter. 2 games, Emi Martinez has just done some incredible work. He really is just taking this whole goalkeeping thing to a new level. He is now Aston Villa's best Premier League era goalkeeper, isn't he? He's left Mark Bosnich in the dust.
Easily. But he's still having a bad season between the sticks if you look at the numbers. I think it's kind of unfair because I think he's been playing very well but hasn't got the protection he needs. And that's, you know, when he's not on international duty trying to climb into the crowds and stop riot police from hitting fans. He is an all-round good human being, it seems like. And you're right, he's surpassed Bosnich and he's well on his way to kind of icon status at Villa if he's not there already. What I love about him is he talks about wanting to play in the Champions League for Villa and he talks about being in a hurry to do it. He's clearly got the right mindset and I was worried about him under Unai Emery. I was worried how he'd fare. He's been fantastic. His distribution is so much better too.
Yeah, he's been working so hard and Emi Martinez definitely takes the number 1 shirt on the Aston Villa all-time Premier League 11. Who takes the number 13 shirt? Who are you having on the bench? Gavin Bozzi or Friedel?
I think Friedel, just because of the numbers he put up. And I never got to see a peak Friedel either. But he was such a good goalkeeper. He really was. And
does David James have a shout or no?
I think David James was a great goalkeeper too. We have a lot of goalkeepers at Villa that seem like reclamation projects. They seem like goalkeepers that other clubs have passed off and discarded. And we go in and we get an industrial sander on them, maybe a little bit of stain and kind of glam them up a bit and turn them into like architectural salvage, some kind of fantastic goalkeepers. Emi Martinez in there too, discarded by Arsenal and suddenly turned into gold dust by Aston Villa.
I find it so hilarious that Arsenal are now on goalkeeper number 3 after selling less than, was it 3 years ago they sold Martinez? Leno to replace Martinez. Oh, no. See you later. Ramsey will do it. Oh, no.
I always want to buy Ramsey and turn him into a great goalkeeper just to show him, like, I don't want to ship off Martinez, but Martinez goes to Bayern, we buy in Ramsey, we turn him into another world-beating goalkeeper. It would be fun to watch.
The problem with Ramsey then, we're going to have too many. Well, Ramsdale, we'll have to contend with his dad, and we don't need that. All right, but back to the game. What can we say? A wonderful cross by substitute Diaby, who, as you say, was an impactful sub in this instance, playing in his position he played for Leverkusen, where we haven't really seen him too much on the right wing for Aston Villa. But well, this is what he can do on the right wing. This might be something viable moving forward. Puts in a delicious cross. It's actually slightly behind Watkins, and Watkins cranes his neck and somehow guides an unstoppable arrow of a header into the corner beyond the despairing grasp of Neto. It's in the 90th minute and Aston Villa earn a point. What is there left to say about Ollie Watkins? His numbers, his all-round play, his scoring of big goals, winning goals?
He's brilliant, isn't he? He's absolutely top draw now. He had no right to score that goal. That ball is not in a position to head it into the back of the net. I don't know what his neck muscle workouts are like, if he's just flexing in the gym with dumbbells either side of it. But it's a phenomenal header, and that's 8 points now Villa have salvaged from losing positions this season, which is good enough for third, well, joint third in the Premier League. And that's vitally important, 8 points. And who knows how important that point will be at the end of the season. The difference between fourth and fifth, difference between first and second, who knows? There's a long way to go. But one thing we do know is Ollie Watkins is fantastic. And I was scared senseless this week about his injury and that it might be something longer term than it turned out to be, because he is truly irreplaceable in that lineup. As much as I love John Duran, as long as I love Moussa Diaby, you take Ollie Watkins out of that team and it's a very different outlet. I think only Salah and Haaland have scored more goals or assisted more goals. More goal involvements, I think, is the term.
Bear in mind, both those cats take penalties. Ollie Watkins does not. And I mean, we know why he doesn't take penalties, but even so, he doesn't take penalties.
He is up there with the cream of the Premier League crop, and fair play to him. I love the man. I think he's a brilliant player, and he's, like a lot of Villa players under Unai Emery, he has shut up his doubters.
Absolutely. We don't hear too much about if Ollie Watkins can't finish anymore, do we? Although I'm sure he will. You know, next time he misses a chance, you know, the timeline will blow up about the problem with selling Danny Ings. But anyway, I digress.
We got 12 million for Danny Ings. I was looking at something the other day about Aston Villa's smart transfer business. And it annoyed me mainly because they said that we had a dud with Wesley and forgot to mention he got physically assaulted and his career ruined. And I was reminded that we got multiple millions for Danny Ings, which is just wonderful. It's daylight robbery. The more I see him play for West Ham, the more hilarious it is that at one point we, Steven Gerrard, considered him the better option up front.
Well, Danny Ings, once upon a time, would have been a very viable option, but his legs, I don't know, I know he's had really problematic knee issues. I heard on the grapevine he couldn't train fully at Aston Villa, and clearly seemed very popular by all accounts. But speaking of goose eggs, 9 appearances for West Ham this season in the league, 4 appearances in the Europa League, and an appearance in the EFL Cup. 0 goals, 0 assists. This may turn out to be one of the best. He's only 31 years of age as well, but clearly Danny Ings. And again, no disrespect to him. I think seems like a really good egg. But his top level career may be grinding to a quick halt. He may need to drop down a league or two. But
him and Callum Chambers,
no longer our problem.
Yeah, him and Callum Chambers. They could go find a club together. Get the band back together.
Maybe he can go back to Southampton now, although they're doing quite well, so I'm not sure they need him.
Yeah, probably not.
So, glass half full on this one. Are you saying a point gained rather than 2 points dropped, Daniel?
I think so. I saw, as there always is on social media, a lot of people blowing up. How can we not beat Bournemouth? This is ridiculous. We played terribly. We got away with a point in the 90th minute. That's a point gained. I'd much rather we take a point away having played badly than lose the game. So I think, obviously, dream scenario, we play well, we get the points. You're not going to play well and get the points every week. As we saw in the other results at the weekend, it's silly season for football at the moment. It is 3-3 draws, 4-3 wins, crazy defeats. All we need to do is keep chugging along and picking up the points. And if that's 3 points for a home win, 1 point away from home, I'll take them wherever we can get them.
I have to tell you, this could be, I think you could be right there. I was a little bit irked with how bad we played, but I think if you have a horrible game, which we did, and you still manage to pull a point, you just be grateful for it and move on with your life. And speaking of moving on with our lives, we are just over 48 hours away as we are recording from welcoming the champions, Manchester City. Now, Manchester City, for those of you who have been living under a rock, are facing 115 FFP charges, which we're not going to talk about today, but I just like to say it. And also, they're going to be without former Aston Villa darling and former Aston Villa captain Jack Grealish, who got suspended yesterday for his 5th booking. Some people are saying that he'd got that on purpose. Who's to say? Maybe he doesn't want to be booed again at Villa. Or maybe he just got booked. Who knows? But more importantly than the Jack Grealish booking, for me, is the Rodri booking. We saw Rodri out for a few fixtures early this season for Manchester City, and I think they lost three on the spin for the first time under Pep Guardiola. And this is the annoying thing about Man City. I suppose when you have unlimited state resources, it maybe shouldn't be that annoying because it just kind of is what it is. But I've seen every time Man City have lost a big player, they always seem to replace them. Like I thought, Kompany's gone now, they're going to struggle. David Silva's gone now, they're going to struggle. Aguero, Yaya Toure. And then they've lost Sterling, they've lost Mahrez, Gundogan. And they just keep moving forward like an inevitable bulldozer coming for your head. And it's really annoying. But without Rodri, dare I say, Daniel, they seem to really have a problem, in even more than Kevin De Bruyne, who's been missing this season.
It's huge for us. They were terrible in that little period without Rodri. And it's an absolute blessing. I mean, who cares about Jack Grealish, really? Doku's the bigger threat out wide. But you're right, Rodri is a huge miss for them. And they're also in a worrying bit of form, and by City standards. I think they've conceded 9 in their last 4 games, which feels very un-Pep-like. John Stones is out too. As I say, Haaland probably should be suspended, but won't be. That's my wishful thinking there. It's a good time to play them. Is there a good time to play Man City? The unstoppable Death Star that they are, is there a good time to do it? Are Villa flying through the trench, aiming a torpedo at a tiny exhaust vent? Is that what Wednesday night's going to be?
Well, let's hope so. Aston Villa's home record, to break our record, I believe, the all-time record, we need to win this one. It doesn't get any harder than that, but... without Rodri, without Grealish, and without that kind of sideshow as well. I think that sometimes serves as a distraction for the fans and maybe the players as well. You know, some of them are certainly, you know, the likes of John McGinn and Konza friendly, and Watkins still friendly with Grealish. And, you know, there's just, without that emotional baggage, it might just clear heads, hearts and minds on the field and off the field and in the stands. And without Rodri, I certainly think there's a chance. I mean, even with Rodri, Manchester City conceded 3 goals yesterday. And they seem to struggle when teams really go for them. And there's one thing that Unai Emery does, is he is going for the jugular. He's going for the throat. Ollie Watkins is in the form of his life. We will welcome Boubacar Kamara back. Jacob Ramsey may be ready to start. Moreno may be ready to start. What would your starting 11 be versus Manchester City, bearing in mind that we are looking to maybe win this game, dare I say?
And we might win. It's not a bad time to play them. What's mad about this game is they're two of the most tactically minded managers in the league, and I think it's just going to be a slogfest. I think it's going to be, you know, like watching WWE wrestling where they're just punching each other repeatedly, one back to the other. I think it'll be that. It'll be the Highline Classico, two teams playing the game in the middle of the pitch, and we'll have to outscore them because they're going to score against us. As far as who I play, I think JJ has to play this one. I think his pace and his deep runs from midfield will be huge against the City backline. I think probably Luka Dean starts, and I still think, I get where you're coming from of having taken Diego Carlos out, but I think that Diego Carlos starts this one as well for us, because I just don't think you trust Matty Cash in this kind of game. But it's...
Doku out, I'm reading, by the way.
I know he was injured, and there was talk about that would be huge for us. Look, they bring in Bernardo Silva or some other world-class player, but the pace of Doku is terrifying. And if it's one thing this Villa side aren't great against, it's pace on the wing. So I'd be very excited to see no Doku, no Rodri.
No Doku, no Rodri, no Grealish. And if you get your way, a ban for Erling Haaland. All right, so...
If we could just have no team turn up, we might stand a chance. That would work.
Well, yeah, that would definitely work. This is really annoying. So I play Sunday League here, and we're second in the league. We're doing well. We're top two go up. And yesterday, because we had a terrible rainstorm, I'm not going to say that some of my teammates are soft, but they're soft. Didn't show up. So we played a team which we beat 4-1 in the reverse fixture, and we lost 7-1 to them because we only had 8 players. So if Manchester City can show up with 8 players, we can definitely win and do the deed, even against an inferior side. But I digress. That was a tangent that was completely unnecessary.
I'm on this tangent now. Isn't the default loss, if you can't get a team out, like 4-0 or something? Would you not have been better not putting a team out for your goal difference? Or is this
too
not,
much?
This is not what Sunday League is about. Am I missing the spirit? It's not what it's about. Yeah.
It's the spirit. Too much pride for that. And also, I scored one from 35 yards. Lobbed the goalkeeper.
It was worth it.
And that was the headline. Yeah. It was actually the opening goal as well. So I just told, I said to someone yesterday, I said, you know, I scored one from 35 yards, and that's really all I remember from the game. It was great. So what is your score prediction here? Manchester City coming to Villa Park on Wednesday.
I'm going to hate myself for this. I fancy us to win, and I think it's going to be an absolute thriller. I think it's 3-2 Villa, maybe even more. I think it's going to be an absolute slugfest.
All right, I'm going to go 2-2. A 2-2 draw, I think there will be goals. We always concede. Manchester City can be gone at. And a 2-2 draw would be fine. But a 3-2 thrilling win, now that would be a real statement.
Do you want to hear something? I fancy us to beat Arsenal afterwards as well. I think this is a defining week for Villa. And I think that I'm excited, which inevitably means when we chat again next week, it will all be horribly wrong and we've lost both games and probably someone's out for the season. But right now I'm excited and I think we can beat them both.
Well, Arsenal just scraped by Bournemouth last week. I think, are they playing tonight? Are they playing?
They play Wolves at the weekend and then they're playing...
Oh yeah, 2-1 win at Wolves and then they're playing Luton tomorrow away. So they also have an extra day's rest on us, which is always fun. So Arsenal, you imagine, would dispatch Luton, interestingly enough. We won't go too much into the Arsenal game because we're out of time, but give me a quick score prediction for Aston Villa versus Arsenal on Saturday.
2-1 against Arsenal. I think Villa win them both and are top of the table by the time we chat next week.
All right, I'm going for 3-1 against Arsenal. I think they are ripe for the picking, and I think they're ready to lose a game, and I think we're ready to beat them in the Unai Emery vindication derby. Speaking of Unai Emery, very last point, Daniel. Just give me your thoughts on Aston Villa acquiring Unai Emery's club, Real Union, in Spain.
It's like a trophy girlfriend. Buy him nice things. Buy him pretty things. Whatever he wants, go out and buy it for him. If he wants us to buy the club his dad played for and he had a stake in anyway, let's do it. If he wants diamond Rolex, let's do it. Whatever he needs, get it for Unai Emery because I want him happy and settled at Aston Villa.
Well, I think we have the title for this week's podcast. It is Unai Emery, trophy girlfriend. And with that, he has been Daniel Bettridge. I have been Craig Storrid. Please check out underagaslitlamp.com for all your latest news and Aston Villa stories and comment pieces. Please, again, check out the sister show, Gather Round Again, available on YouTube and all of your other platforms. We are going to have a busy week at Aston Villa. We'll see you here again on the regular feed next Monday, hopefully reviewing 2 wins from 2 against Arsenal and Manchester City. Thank you for listening. Up the Aston Villa and up the Unai Emery Trophy Girlfriend FC. Bye-bye.